Hello and welcome, everyone, to a very special edition of Podcast Them Softly. This is Frank, and I'm obviously joined by my co-host, co-founder, and BFF, Nick. Hello, Nick.
What's going on, Frank? How you doing tonight?
Not much. This is a very special podcast because we have a very special guest, and along with that, Nick is allowing me to introduce the guest, which he's done. This will be the fourth time. So it's always very exciting for me to be able to introduce people. So thank you for that, Nick. And I'm going to get into the intro. So excited. All right. One of our first interviews we conducted was with writer-director Sean Mullen, whose film A Mirror and Sam was released earlier this year. Both Nick and I are very big fans, and we can't wait to see what Sean is up to next. But today, we have one of the leads of the film, the wonderful actress Dina Shahabi. After working on some short films, she made her feature film debut with the 2011 indie drama David, before being selected by Mullen as the love interest for the co-lead Martin Starr, who is from Silicon Valley, among many other things. He's a great actor in A Mirror and Sam. A Mirror and Sam played the festival circuit and has garnered multiple awards, and Dina's soulful and passionate performance was a big reason for the film's overall success. Later this year, she'll be seen in the indie efforts Good Funk and the provocative-sounding Cigarette Soup, and she's in pre-production on a 2016 comedy called Cherry Pop. Welcome to the show, Dina. It's an absolute pleasure that we get to speak with you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
And really just super exciting to get a chance to talk with you, Dina. Ever since we saw the movie, we both said what a great performance and, you know, what a talented, you know, new acting talent to get a chance to see on screen. So we're very much looking forward to chatting you up. I guess maybe just to start it off, considering that, you know, again, for us, certainly you're, you know, on the new things in terms of an on-screen talent. How did you get your start? What's your background like?
How I got my start in acting?
Yeah, yeah. What drew you to acting? How did you get started?
Well, I grew up as a dancer, and I was part of this dancing company called the Sharmila Kamte Dancing Company in Dubai, where I grew up. And when I was 15, I moved to Lebanon, and so I couldn't be a part of the dance company, so I started acting more in high school. And then a year later, because of, like, war and just because of different circumstances in my family, we moved back to Dubai, and so I then juggled acting and dance. And so when I was 18, I made the decision to move to New York to pursue both. And so I would take acting classes during the day and then take dance classes at night. And I did that for about 2 years. I got a dance agent, and I was mostly auditioning for dance things and then still taking acting classes. And I don't know, acting just sort of won at some point. I just kind of fell more and more into it. And then about 3 years after living in New York, I decided to apply to Juilliard. And the guy that was helping me audition for Juilliard, this wonderful man named Charles Tuthill, convinced me to also audition for the graduate program at NYU, and I didn't have a bachelor's degree, and he was like, oh, you're not going to get in, just audition for more than one place at a time so that you're not putting too much pressure on yourself. And then I ended up getting into both programs, and at Juilliard I would have gotten a bachelor's degree, but NYU ended up, like, basically gifting me a waiver, so I graduated with an MFA, with a master's degree.
Wow.
Yeah, so then that's how I got into acting, really. And so I went to NYU for grad school, and when I was in, when it was my second year at NYU, I auditioned for A Mirror and Sam, and got it, and so I shot it in the summer break between my second and third year. So we wrapped the night before I went back to school, and then had to go back for a year and finish classes and, you know, shows and that kind of stuff. So I've only been out of school for a year now.
It seems
that makes me feel old.
Grad school.
And also,
Oh, that doesn't make me feel so old. It's just grad school. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And just a very intense period of your life, no doubt. I mean, between, you know, getting a chance to be in a movie like Amir and Sam and still, you know, being a student and having to fit in one and jump right into the next, certainly left you with, you know, probably not a lot of room for, you know, anything else but work.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm better busy. Like, as an actor, you spend a lot of time auditioning and with a lot of time kind of, I don't want to say, like, waiting around, but it feels that way. Like, feel it, like, waiting for the next thing to happen. And that's excruciating for me. Like, I would much rather go, I think any actor would say that they'd like to go from job to job, you know? But it's, you know, the reality of the business is that it's very seldom like that. And so to be that busy is like an ideal world for me.
Excellent. So Amir and Sam, great movie. I hope everybody checks it out. I know Sean mentioned that it was going to be on Amazon Prime, I think, like July 5th. So I know a lot of people that listen to our podcast got a chance to watch it and loved it, and it was awesome to hear their feedback on it. What was like the most challenging aspect of shooting that film?
My first day on set, I burned my cornea with hydrogen peroxide and had to be taken to hospital and was blind for 24 hours. That was the most challenging day.
Oh, God.
How did that happen? What?
I know. Well, what happened? It's a funny story. It's funny now. At the time, I wanted to die. but what happened was I was living in a kind of studio-esque apartment. Studio-esque meaning it was a studio with like a half door separating the living room from the bedroom, you know, like New York apartment. Mm-hmm. And I had two friends of mine taking the New York bar. And so they were in town from London, and so they were sleeping on my couch. And I came home after our first day of shooting, which was really like just bare bones. We had, you know, our cinematographer and just Martin and I and Sean and Sasha, our makeup artist, and Brian, who was working with costumes, like just running around the city shooting that last kind of like montage scene. And so that was our first day, just kind of stealing shots all around New York. And so I came home around midnight, and I didn't want to wake them up. And the day before, I got two samples from Lens Crafters, and one of them was red, and one of them was blue. And they didn't tell me anything about it for my contacts, okay, when I picked up contact lenses. And I came home, and I just grabbed one of the solutions, and I went to the bathroom, and I, like, you know, kind of put my contacts in. The contact case, one of the solutions, went to bed. Next morning, I woke up and, you know, took a shower and then was putting my contacts in, and it felt like I was putting acid straight into my eyes. And I screamed so loud, and George, my friend, who was one of the guys staying with me, like, had to pull it out of my eye because it was hurting so much. I was so tired that I didn't think twice about it. I kind of put the contact back in the case and thought, oh, maybe it was something like that I had in my eye or like on my finger. I never put it together that it was my contact solution. And so I took the contacts with me, and I figured I would put my contacts in after I went through makeup. And then that's what I did. And so then I reburned my eye. And then at this point, I remember like our gaffer Chad, who I love so much, was like, this time he was like pulling it out of my eye, but I'd done so much damage at this point that I couldn't really keep my right eye open. And then they went and got me like cleaning, like saline solution, and that wasn't helping. And then it started leaking, the hydrogen peroxide, because what happened is that Lens Crafter gave me a hydrogen peroxide like extra cleaning solution that you're supposed to use like a special contact case that has a catalyst that turns it into water overnight. They didn't explain any of this to me. And then, I ended up burning my cornea, and I was trying to shoot that, like, bedroom scene, like, the scene when Sam first arrives and I, like, slam the door in his face.
Right.
I'm, like, the whole time we were shooting that scene, I, like, couldn't keep my eyes open. And so I was just, like, trying to force my eyes open because they were in so much pain. I felt like my eyes had acid in them. That we had to break early for lunch. And then I was sitting with Martin because Sean was like, just rest, like close your eyes. And closing my eyes like made it worse. And at this point, Martin was like, you need to go to the hospital. And so Eric, one of our producers, took me to the hospital. And it was like 8 hours of us waiting around. And I didn't know whether I was going to like see again. And I was like, I'm going to get fired. It was just the worst, and it was the first day, so that was everyone's first impression of me, you know, like the girl who burnt her cornea. I was mortified. It was the worst. It was the worst experience ever, but it made us close, all of us, very fast.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you're probably an instant family, and there's really, you know, what else could happen after that that would be, you know, worse than that, so that's definitely a memorable first day story, if there ever was one.
Yeah, I think Sean said that he didn't sleep that night, like 1 minute. He just like stayed up terrified.
Oh my God, it's probably the worst thing ever.
If I was gonna be able to see again, it was horrible. Oh my God.
It's like I almost feel bad laughing, but it's just so awesome that like I feel the need to laugh.
It's become my funniest story, you know.
A badge of honor that you'll proudly wear around.
What?
I said it's a badge of honor that you'll proudly wear around.
Oh God, that's a good way to think about it.
So how did you meet Sean, and how did the casting process for Amir and Sam work? Like, you know, what, how were you tipped off about the project?
Lace Neckley, who played my uncle in the film, who was amazing.
He's excellent.
He's excellent. He's also he's an incredible human being. I mean, I can't say enough good things about him. He's an amazing, amazing person. He told me about the project the same day. It was kind of like just perfect timing. He told me about it, and I had a manager who I'd met through like being at NYU and that I was working with already, that also at the same time, like, sent me the appointment. So it was, like, within an hour, they both found, like, they both told me about it. Was signed onto it. And so, Leif told Sean about me, and so they were aware that, like, I existed and wasn't some just, like, random person, but which always helps. But so that's kind of how it happened. And so there was an audition, and then there was a call back where Sean came, and because I think he saw my tape, and then he came and read with me, and then I feel like they made me wait for a month. No joke, was that long. I think Sean says, which, you know, I believe sometimes. I'm kidding. But Sean says that he knew was me kind of from the moment that he saw the tape, but so much goes into casting. Like, I know that first, like, they definitely were trying to find someone that had, like, more pull than me and all these things that you need for a movie, you know?
Right.
But luckily they couldn't find anyone, so it stayed with me. I got it. because, yeah, it was wonderful. And Sean and I, like, got along straight off the bat. And, it was amazing. And it was just, it was kind of incredible. It was a combination of I couldn't believe that I'd gotten it, because it's always a miracle when you book something as an actor, you know, because there's so many incredible actors out there. But also, when I'd read the script and when I auditioned for the part, it was one of those weird things where I was like, I have to play her, you know? So I'm really glad that it worked out that way. That was a long time.
So, like, did you get any callbacks, or was it just, like, the initial, like, interview audition, and you just waited and waited and waited?
No, I had one callback. and then I waited.
That sounds bad, like excruciating.
I know. I bet you it was like 2 weeks, but to me, I have a memory of it being like a month to 2 weeks, you know?
Right.
Which I doubt is accurate. But yeah, I remember I was on, my parents live in Europe, and so I was on a plane to London, and I'd gotten off the plane, and I'd had like a missed call from my manager with like a voicemail saying that I'd gotten it. I was in the airport, and I was like, oh my God, who do I tell? There's no one here, like I'm in the airport.
Yelling at strangers.
I know, just like shout at, you know, the first person I see. In London, they'd be like, please stop talking to me. But yeah, it was really exciting. And then so that was honestly the best summer ever. Cause I remember a friend of mine had a wedding and then I'd come back to New York. I came back to New York and just got to work, you know, got to
work right.
with people I loved. And, just our crew and the actors, I'm still friends with so many of them and really close with them. And it was a really special group of people Sean assembled. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's like when you're a part of a film that feels on screen as intimate as it does, then one is left with the impression that the professional relationships between the cast and crew you know, have an equal amount of intimacy. And I guess I want to ask, because both you and Martin had such great chemistry together, and you know, it's one of those great, you know, fish out of water love stories, you know, like a guy who's not expecting to find someone, you know, right in front of him, and he does, and you know, she's initially resistant to his charms. What was it like when you found out you'd be working with Martin, and you know, what was it like working with him? Because we're both, Frank and I are big fans. I think he's a great comedic talent who, you know, thankfully because of Sean, got a chance to, you know, stretch his, you know, dramatic muscles, which is great.
I'm such a huge fan of Martin. I mean, when I auditioned for the part and saw that he was playing the guy, I got so excited because I was such a, you know, Freaks and Geeks fan and just thought, and he was my favorite, you know? And what was funny about it, I don't think I've ever told him this actually, but what was funny about it is that I just watched Freaks and Geeks for the first time, like a month before I got the audition. You know, I was like a late bloomer for that show. And so I just watched it, and then suddenly I have this audition where he's the lead of it, and so it felt very kind of surreal to me.
I bet.
Yeah, and so I was so excited, and I just, you know, I just think he's so good in everything that he does, and I think he's so good in this movie. I mean, even just work, I learned so much just working with him every day. He's such a professional, and he's so simple, and he's so just connected to his heart and is just so open. And I mean, it was a dream working with that guy. I would work with him forever. He's amazing. And we got along immediately. I remember Sean was like, Martin gets in today. I really want you guys to hang out. So here's his number. And I was like, okay. I feel really weird, like just like texting him. Like he doesn't know who I am. And Sean was like, no, you're about to like be in a movie together. Just text him. And I was like, you know what? Whatever. I'll like find another way. And I remember then, I went to a costume fitting and he was there, and, he was exhausted because he'd like taken the red eye. And I think I was like, what are you doing right now? Do you want to hang out? Or he maybe said like, we should hang out or something. I forget who said it. And I was like, yeah, okay, great. I was leaving the costume fitting and he was arriving, and he was like, okay, great. I'll call you after my costume fitting. And I was like, cool. So I was thinking like, maybe we'd like go to a coffee or go to lunch or something. And he calls me, and I remember he picks me up from my apartment, and he's like, so I need to go grocery shopping. And I was like, oh, okay. And we went to Whole Foods. And so I just like walked around with him in Whole Foods. Like as he like bought, like he's obsessed with like the gummy bears at Whole Foods. So he was like buying them and like a bunch of like shit. He was really, really healthy when we shot the film. He wanted to be in, like, army shape. And he also made smoothies every morning, and he's, like, an incredible smoothie maker. I have to say that because he would, like, buy a lot of smoothie products, like flax seeds. Anyway, I don't know why that's important, but it was like these things stood out to me as we were, like, walking around Whole Foods. And then and I was also like, this is really random. But then we went to the place that he was staying at, and we just, like, sat down and spoke about everything for hours. And we ended up spending this whole day together and then, like, going to dinner with Sean, and then we, like, met up with some of our investors. And it was so great. It was immediate. Like, we immediately just, like, really liked each other as people. That's, I think people always say when they watch the movie how great our chemistry is, and that's the best compliment. You know, you really always hope that the way you feel about a person in real life would translate, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, in real life, you have time to get to know somebody and, you know, develop a relationship, and what seems so easy for actors can't, you know, you can tell us that it comes natural, but, you know, it's amazing. I mean, when you have just met someone and you're just getting to know them and you're being asked to, you know, perform in these ways on screen, you know, it's certainly a testament to you guys obviously getting along well with each other and being, you know, open. And, you know, given that he's had such, you know, really great success in the comedic world with his roles, and he's sort of like kind of, you know, created this brand for himself on Silicon Valley at this point. If you want that snarky, you know, wise talking guy, you know, he's one of the tops, you know, on the list. What I thought was really nice for him, was that you guys, he got a chance to sort of subvert the expectations of what people have come to know him from. And then when you add into that a new face, relatively speaking, for yourself, you know, I just feel like the combination was irresistible.
Thank you. That's so lovely to hear. Thank you.
Of course. And you had mentioned, can you say the actor's name again who plays your uncle?
Leigh Snackley.
Yep. Had you worked with him before on anything? You said, was there a connection there you mentioned?
We knew each other. We'd never worked together. But we were part of, like, the same, like, community. He's always kind of been, like, just kind of wonderful to me. And this film got us close. Like, he's now, like, an older brother to me.
Yep.
But before that, we just kind of had, like, mutual respect for each other as, like, actors, but also just, like, really adored each other as people, and we knew each other for a few years before the movie. Yeah.
And, you know, that's another thing, too, where he doesn't have a ton of screen time, but in a very small amount of time, he comes across as very soulful. And, you know, it's just one of those performances that, you know, it punctuates the movie, you know, in all the right ways.
Yeah, I love his performance. I think it's perfect. Yeah.
And without spoiling anything for anybody, the ending, and we can sort of dance around it. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but were you happy with the way that the narratives, like, ended? Did you ever question the reality of the situation for the characters, or were you excited about the notion of Mullen, you know, taking his story, with his heart?
I think it works, you know? I think sometimes when you read things on paper, you're like, would this happen? Or, you know, you just, it's hard to picture it. But when I watched it, I bought it, you know? And I think that, I don't know, I believe, I'm a romantic, and so I believe that what happens is possible, you know? Like, why not? And also, it's like, has a fairy tale aspect, and, I think that it's about the heart at the end, and led by the heart is kind of the only way it could have gone, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, that's, I'm sorry. That's a perfect way of putting it, because generally I don't seek out like the fish out of water love stories like these, and I watched it upon Nick's initial reaction because he loved it and he said he contacted Sean about coming on, but I absolutely loved it, and I mean, particular the end, and you're so right with like this fairy tale whimsical ending to it. I thought it was remarkable. I mean, I loved it. I need to watch this again.
Oh, I too.
So yeah, you know what? I'll buy it. That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah,
I'm gonna buy it here in Snap. See, there we go. Dude. And I recommend everybody who's listening to this buy it as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We'll put a link up.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, it's one of those small gems that just, you know, that every year there's 20 or 30 of these movies that are real, and they're about people, and they're about something smart and you know, and relevant to society, and you know, they don't have a huge marketing budget, and they're from a smaller, you know, release, you know, smaller company, made by younger filmmakers, and you know, I love being able to get, you know, someone who's never heard of the movie or whatever. You know, it was put on my radar by one of the guys who worked on the film in the art department. One of my friends on Facebook, you know, I hadn't heard of the film, and, you know, and that's one of the things I've loved, you know, Frank and I have loved so much about, you know, meeting each other online and getting a chance to talk about movies all day, is that we're exposing ourselves to movies, you know, that we didn't know about through people that, you know, we'll never meet in person, but, you know, can offer up an Amira and Sam or a, you know, a Metro Manila or a Spring or one of these, you know, really exciting movies that are, you know, made sort of outside the studio system with a real voice.
That's amazing to hear. You know, there's so much kind of negativity about technology, and rightly so. I mean, there are things, you know, that are negative about it. But one of the most amazing things about it is what you just said, is that it, you know, it brings people together from all around the world, and it connects us, and it allows us to learn from each other in like a really fast way, in a way that we would never have been able to without it. You know, that's pretty remarkable, I think.
Oh yeah. I mean, without a doubt, that's how Nick and I got our start with everything. And that's how we've been able to reach out to people like you and Sean and, you know, 90% of the people. Meet? What's that?
How did you and Nick meet?
Nick and I's epic love story all sparked from
love, I can tell.
His wife hates me. But it all started from, we were mutual friends with somebody, and we started talking about the same film. I think it was like Terrence Malick or The Tree of Life, and then Nick sent me a friend request, and obviously we all love the same stuff and the same almost down to everything we love, and we would talk a lot, and then it was like, hey, we should like do something with this. Why don't we start a podcast? And that's how this was birthed. And then, yeah, it's like all about social media, because like I'm the first one ever to bag on social media and like how it's bad for people. But at the same time, this never would have happened without social media. So it does have a happy ending,
yeah,
somewhat. So, yeah, that's how Nick and I met.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's riveting.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I had always wanted to maybe try to do something like this, but when Frank, you know, said, hey, why don't we try to do a podcast, you know, we sort of took it as, you know, a chance to just talk about movies that we loved, and then, you know, we had an in with the filmmaker, and, you know, we got the bug, you know, the bug bit us, and, you know, we basically just figured, you know, there's just so many great people out there who make themselves available, thankfully, on Facebook and through the internet, and who seemingly, you know, want to talk with people who are just straight up film buffs. I mean, we don't get paid to do this. This is something that we do because we really enjoy it, and it's part of our, you know, our all day sort of life. I sort of want to circle back to something about you, because what I thought was interesting is that you said that you have a dance background.
Yeah, I do.
How does the dance background come into play, and if it does, with acting and the roles that you've had a chance to take on? And, you know, Frank and I unfortunately haven't had a chance to see some of the shorts that you've worked on. But I'm just curious if you've used or had a chance to use any of the, you know, what I'm assuming was intense training for dance, you know, in any of your films.
It hasn't really been used in the films I've done. I hope it does. That would be a dream. But it mostly, it's helpful just as like a body connection thing. I feel like a great thing that comes from dance is just the connection to your body, and I think that's really important for an actor. And if anything, it's helped so much for theater. You know, I did a play in the fall that I like it. The fact that I have that ability, just it allows you to move in a way that is just really fluid, and I don't know. I think it's really helpful for any actor to have like a physical background. Dance has been really important to me and still is. So I like to use it in any circumstance that I can, you know.
Do you see yourself like doing something with that? Like in any of your future projects, maybe? I don't know if you can hint at anything like that.
And you live
you know what I mean?
And you live in New York where, you know, there's Broadway beckons, you know?
I know. I mean, I would love to do that. I would love to. Nothing that's like in the books or anything or planned, but I would love to. I mean, I always think of just like writing something about my dance teacher that I grew up with. Just really, she's an incredible woman with an incredible story. And I always think of like writing something about her and doing it that way. But I would love, I mean, I would, I always try and keep an ear out or an eye out for something that has dance in it because it's such a huge part of me and it makes me sad not to use it, you know?
Yeah. So are you writing something? Or are you going to? Do you plan on doing it? Like, well, actually, sometime soon?
I mean, I've like written, like I write all the time. I'm writing another thing I have a project that I've been writing with this woman, Mona Mansour, who's like incredible playwright, and we've been writing a movie together about something else entirely. And so writing and creating is a huge interest for me, especially that I feel like I come from a culture that's so full and just me, like my world in general, like my family is so interesting and full of culture and experiences that I've been interested in writing from the get-go, of that being a huge part of my life. I mean, my ideal world would be creating my own projects, you know? So that's what I'm trying to do. I also think that's the way the industry is moving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That you kind of have to create your own projects. And I think that's great. I actually think it's really a positive thing, that it's exciting that that's something that's so encouraged and something that's so, I don't know, thrilling right now for everyone is to see, you know, like Sean, like writer directors or, so I'm constantly writing. And so that's something that I've like written bits and pieces of, like the story of her, like I've kind of written like very simple outlines of it or like little scenes or what I would imagine it being. But I've also written something about like my mother and my aunt in Lebanon during the war and during a year that their father was passing away. And that's something that I'm really passionate about, that I haven't decided whether it'll be like a play or a feature, but that's something I've been writing for a very long time. And then this project with Mona, we're writing, like, I can't really talk about it, but we're basically just writing about what it's like for what it means for someone to, it's like a coming of age in your 20s / culture with crime story, basically. is what it is.
Nice.
a little bit more than just a coming of age. You like kind of splice genre into it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's centered around this kind of event of her, of this girl, young woman committing this crime that alienates her from her cult, like every world that she comes from, you know, which is America and the Middle East, and it explores like her relationship with this incredible person, and her relationship with her parents and her family and herself, and kind of what she's seeking. And I don't know. I think it's I'm really excited about it. We're really interested in telling a story about a girl, because Mona is also half Arab, and I'm half Arab. I'm half Arab, half European, but she's half Arab, half American. And we're really interested in telling a story of like what it means to be someone that straddles. We're talking about Amira and Sam, because I think Amira straddles two cultures, right? She's like trying to adapt to this American culture, whereas she comes from a culture that's very different, you know? But there's something that's interesting to Mona and I about like the Western Arab, you know, like the one that's been educated overseas and is like quite westernized and acclimated, yet there's like this huge part of her that's attached to a completely different world and lifestyle, and like the pursuit of power and what that does to a woman, what that does to an Arab woman who, you know, has a
absolutely
relationship to it.
And little could be more timely than those themes and an exploration of a character like that. I mean,
I've been reading all these articles about those young women joining ISIS, you know? I mean, that's a lot of what the research Mona and I have been doing, because it's these young westernized women that they're calling it like this, the new girl power in like Western, and like Western societies now is not like punk rock. It's join ISIS, you know? I don't know. I read a pretty fascinating article in the New York Times yesterday. I should send it to you guys if you haven't read it already.
I haven't read it, but I'll read it.
Cool. Yeah. It's fascinating. I find that, they're as young as 13 going, flying, getting their papers together, getting money together, getting help, I guess, obviously. Flying to Turkey and then taking a bus to Syria, and they're going on their own, you know, desires. It's,
jeez.
Yeah. It's,
wow. You just, You brought the seriousness level way up on the podcast.
Sorry.
Here. No, you're good. You're good. No.
It's filled with so much, a lot of serious right now. Let's say that at least.
No, certainly. I mean, yeah.
And that was one of the things I think that will make a film like Amira and Sam and other films of its ilk, you know, resonate for times to come, because, you know, if there's been a more volatile political, you know, climate, you know, in our life, in my lifetime, and, you know, you pointed out to me. And I think that one of the things that Amira and Sam did so well, and to credit Sean, definitely, and obviously the performers, everybody involved, but he knew exactly sort of how to balance the topical elements of the, you know, the plight of the illegal immigrant and, you know, the sense of, you know, emotional loss that a soldier might feel when he comes home and he's, you know, alienated and he's trying to figure himself out. And I think that one of the best things that you guys did, you know, you especially, was that there's multiple shades to each character in Amira and Sam. And Amira is this woman who, you know, sort of has she's still thinking maybe with her old mentality, and she knows how to sort of survive in her previous life, but now she's sort of overwhelmed by the city and what, you know, what her chances could be like, you know, for her life and setting herself up. And what was it sort of like taking on a character who has to go through multiple, you know, decisions and changes? You certainly are not playing a character with a flat emotional line.
Thank you. I think no character has a flat. I think that's maybe there is a character out there that does actually, for sure. But I think for the most part, humans...
Some characters don't change, or there's, you know, they stay one way, or, you know, they're focused. They're very focused. And, you know, Amira has the ability to, your outlook on the situation, I think, you know, the character's outlook on the situation sort of is reflected by her relationships.
Yeah, I think for the most part, I mean, I think humans, what's amazing about acting to me is that human beings are fascinating and they're layered and they're complex and they can feel about one thing one day in one way just because of what happened to them that day, and the next day it's a completely different story. You know what I mean? So it's like there's just and I feel like what's fun about playing a character like Amira, who's just been through so much, I mean, been through beyond what we can imagine, you know, with losing a brother, but also living through war and what Iraq must have been like at that time is just terrifying. And then having to leave her home, leave her parents, leave her friends, leave everything she knows to live with an uncle that, you know, she loves, but it's not her dad, you know, and it's not her brother. And like, it's a reminder of home every day that she can't be in. And so I think I was very much like wanting to be aware of all those things, but also not like make her a victim, because I don't think she is. I think she's someone that is like extremely brave and like takes the world by, you know, I'm terrible with like American sayings. I don't know what it is. Like takes the world by like the bootstraps or something. But I don't know what it is. I don't know how you say that. Like, I just think that she's like a doer, you know? Like
she grabs the bull by the horns.
By the horns, yeah. I was going to say that, but it didn't feel right. But so she like, you know, she wants to make money. So she's like, you know, fuck it, I'm going to do this to make money. I don't think that she just like, even if it's illegal or even if it's like against what her uncle wants her to do, she's like, no, but this is what I can do right now and I'm going to do it. I'm not going to wait around and do nothing with my life, you know? And then also that she gets in trouble and then she's like, you know, packing. She doesn't wait around, you know? She's just a complete, like, and I think Sam's that way too. He just moves. And I think that's one of the ways they really connected. And, so that was really fun. I think sometimes also it's hard to take credit for like, you know, what happens when you're acting. Cause sometimes it's just, I would just like be, you know, it's what happened between like Martin and I like shared in a room together, you know, but it didn't really feel like my emotional life as opposed to like just experiencing like what was going on between the two of us. And that was a lot of it, really. I don't really remember, especially like that scene, like that 8-minute scene, which we like shot 12 times or something. I never like thought about like what I was feeling or how I was supposed to feel, you know, I just kind of like did, I was just doing it and just, you know.
Yeah, we should mention the long takes. There's multiple long takes in this film, and one in particular, like you said, that goes on for, I think, like you said, 8 minutes. As a performer, what is it like to know that you're going to have extended takes going on, and that's part of the aesthetic? How do you prepare for that?
Well, coming from the theater, that's normal, you know, like you can have like an hour of being on stage in front of people, you know, but one thing about it that's different is that like we had a camera like over us like recording everything, you know, so that's obviously the difference between theater, like it keeps moving and, you know, if you make a mistake it's like it's past and like you can just keep going and no one has it on camera, but so it's like I don't really remember thinking it was odd because I'm so used to doing long scenes in the theater. But if anything, it was just the challenge of it, I think, was being that close to each other on a bed in the heat of New York summer. Trying to find like that sweet spot of like, because I think they used the ninth take or something. It was to find where that scene lived, you know?
They always use the last take, huh?
I don't know. Sometimes, I guess. It's hard. I'm doing it, I think. I had no idea how anything was going, but I remember after we did that ninth take, I think we did two more, and Martin was like, Sean, we got it like 3 times ago or something like that. Like Martin had been aware of like which one worked. And Sean was like, yeah, I know. I remember some sort of conversation like that happening. But I wasn't necessarily as aware of like which one worked or which one didn't. It definitely felt like it got better as it went along. Because that's another thing with film is that you don't have like the same kind of rehearsal process you get in the theater, you know, not even close. We had 3 days. But Martin and I went over that scene over and over and over again so that the lines were completely natural and that we knew what we were saying, and Sean let us like improv a bit if we needed to. But like, for example, him licking my face, like, I don't think that was in the script. Like, I think he just like told him to do that and they did not tell me, you know? So I was like, what?
I was going to ask, because of the improv nature of some of Martin's background with some of his shows and movies and stuff, was there much improv going on the set? But obviously you've just answered that. That's one of your improv highlights, I would have to imagine, is being licked on the face without warning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was Sean comes from an improv background. Like, well, he comes from stand-up comedy, but I think he did do improv as well.
Yep.
But yeah, so there was, I mean, a lot, we really stuck to the script, but there were parts of the movie that Sean allowed improv, and he was just so open to just playing and trying things, and he was just, I loved working, I love Sean so much. He's one of my favorite people in the world. And yeah, he was really open to improv and that kind of stuff.
What are some of your favorite films?
I love The Godfather 1 and 2.
Obviously. What do you think about 3?
I'm not a fan.
Not at all?
Not really. You're a fan, I can tell.
I mean, I will say it has, like, the best poster of the three. But, yeah, come on, with, like, Al Pacino and, like, his hands on his face. It's awesome. But, yeah, no, I mean, I like 3. I mean,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah, like,
I think I love 2 and 1. I think those are, like, epic masterpieces.
Oh,
but, I mean, 3 is, like, yeah, it's kind of shitty, but it's still...
I mean,
all right, anyway, enough about The Godfather. What else?
I love Jurassic Park. That's, like, my childhood favorite movie.
That's awesome.
What else? So many things. I mean, I'm someone that, like, my favorite movie changes. Like, I'll watch something recently and then just be obsessed with it and think it's the best thing I've ever seen, you know? I, like, live in hyperbole. So it's, like, my favorite movie is always, like, the last best movie I've ever seen, you know?
Right.
Welcome to my world.
Is that you as well?
That's certainly Nick.
I love movies, and I have the benefit of in some respects not being a professional critic, where I'm forced to watch 8 pieces of shit in order to get to one great movie.
Yeah.
So 9 times out of 10, I sit down and I watch something that is of immediate interest. It's got some sort of element, you know, a filmmaker, or a craft person, or an actor, an actress. Something about it is, you know, there's a reason for me to sit down and see it. And there are so many awesome, great films out there that are worth people's time. So for me, I can never understand the notion of someone who's a film fan saying there's nothing good for me to watch tonight, because there's like 100 movies that I could tell people to watch that I think have been great. So yes, I'm sort of with you on that. You know, I've got my favorites for sure that will never change, but you know, my feeling is that every movie has the potential to be great, and it has the you know, I would hope the desire to be great and to show you something you've never seen before. I got a second year love for the original Jurassic Park. That was a movie, you know, that when I left the theater as an 11-year-old, or I think it was when that came out, 91?
Yeah.
93? 91, yep, so I was like 11. I was convinced that there was going to be real dinosaurs in, like, my lifetime, so.
Yeah, I grew up thinking that dinosaurs and human beings lived at the same time. Like, I just thought that.
There's a lot of people that actually believe that.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, down in the southern part of the country. But hopefully, I don't know if we have any listeners down there. Sorry, but I'm not sorry. But yeah.
I'm sorry,
not
sorry.
Yeah, no.
I love dinosaurs. I think they're so cool. They're like an obsession of mine. I sometimes just like Google dinosaurs and like learn about new different kinds of dinosaurs. It's like my guilty pleasure. It's so strange. I just think
dinosaurs aren't guilty pleasure. Come on, that's awesome.
Dinosaurs rule. If you're a fan of dinosaurs, I have to ask simply because Frank and I are such huge fans. And
The Land Before Time.
Oh my God, The Land Before Time was my. Oh my. God.
I used to cry every time I watched that.
If I watched it now, I would cry.
I can't remember the last time I've seen that. I don't want to watch it because then I'll cry. I always cry in The Neverending Story too.
I love that movie so much.
When the horse dies,
oh my!
It's like the worst thing that's ever happened in my entire life is when that horse dies.
What, in Land Before Time?
No, Neverending Story.
Oh, I'm still talking about Land Before.
Oh, okay. No, yeah.
I was like, I don't think there's a horse.
there's like horse and people
question.
In Land Before Time. Come on.
I was like, wait, am I a fake fan? Was there a horse?
No. Am I a fake fan? Yes, there is a horse in Land Before Time.
God. You're like, yet. It's the climax. The horse. Oh, God.
Dina, have you seen the coming attraction for new film, The Good Dinosaur? Because it gives off the same, hopefully, the same vibe of Land Before Time.
Really? I think I saw something about it, but...
It looks very cute. But no, I was going to ask, have you seen The Tree of Life? Because
yes.
there's a dinosaur sequence in The Tree of Life that I can promise you is unlike any dinosaur sequence that you've ever seen in any movie.
No, I know. I've seen it. It is pretty incredible. That movie.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, Frank and I are massive fans, and if you like dinosaurs, I thought that movie is for another podcast, but that whole creation sequence, that 20 minutes is like the most spellbinding thing I've ever seen in a movie, and the
it was beautiful.
Yeah.
I remember just being like stuck to like being like how what is that? Oh my God, how is this happening?
Yeah.
Watching that.
And I just remember, like, I went to the first screening, the opening day in Chicago. I took, like, the day off of work and went on a Friday with a buddy. And it was a small theater. Well, it's not a small theater, but it was in a small auditorium at the theater. And when the quote from the Book of Job comes up, the projector or whatever started flickering. And I don't think I've ever been so mad in my entire life. And I thought just, like, the whole movie was going to be ruined by it.
Oh, no. But
I know, but... Thankfully, it wasn't, and everything worked out okay, or else I don't know what I would have done. But that's just a bad experience.
Yeah, I dragged, I basically said to my wife, Erica, I said, all right, that's it, we're getting in the car, we're driving in New York, because I can't wait the 3 weeks that it's going to take for this movie to get out of, you know, exclusive limited release and get to Connecticut. So that was a drive down into the city, you know, car, train, cab, you know, get to the theater and sit there in complete awe. Thankfully, there was no thankfully there were no technical difficulties when I did that trip, because probably would have heard about it for a while.
God, if you just made that whole trip and it was like 5 minutes of the movie, sorry,
Yeah, and I was like crazy. Like I called that theater probably 5 or 6 times leading up to the day that we went to New York. I was asking them questions like, well, what size theater auditorium do you have it in? And what is the seats like? I'm coming from out of state because normally I, you know, there's one.
Jeez, man.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make sure. So because I'd read all things online, you know, make sure if you're going to this complex, see it on this screen. Thankfully, it was on this particular screen. Everybody was saying is the screen to see it on. But yeah, that was truly an event. And again, it's just a further reminder that, you know, movies have the capability of, you know, transporting people, you know, to somewhere they've never been, which is always one of my favorite things with movies. The best movies for me, you know, whether it be The Godfather or Jurassic Park or Amira and Sam,
Land Before Time,
you know, it puts you somewhere where you're never going to get a chance to go and experience something that you'll never get a chance to see. So it's good to see that you have a nice broad range in film enjoyment. I was going to say, what do you have personally coming up on the horizon for yourself?
Oh my God. Honestly, it's just, besides this movie I've been writing, it's just a lot of auditions and a lot of like potential, like waiting to hear and just kind of just, you know, hustling, just auditions, you know, that's where I am right now.
And anything you can tell us about, I know that we got off, you know, what we could find online, but anything that you can tell us about Good Funk or Cigarette Soup or Cherry Pop, any of these movies we should be looking out for these?
Cigarette Soup, I actually shot the same summer I shot Amir and Sam, and I have no idea if it's getting a release or anything. I haven't heard anything, but Cherry Pop is actually one of my best friends. He wrote it and is shooting it. It's an amazing movie based on a short film that he did that's like about the life of drag queens and about this like straight man that decides to like, that he tries being a drag queen and kind of falls in love with it. And it's about his story. And it's one of the funniest scripts I've ever read. It's pretty amazing. I'm really proud of him.
That's awesome. That sounds good.
Yeah. I think it'll be really good. I think it'll be really good. Yeah. But that's it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. This was amazing. This is a great chat.
My pleasure. So lovely to meet you two.
Yeah, and tell you what, if you ever want to come back on and like we could talk about a movie, any movie you want, like Jurassic Park or Land Before Time or something like that, you're more than welcome back on to discuss the film with us.
Ah, thank you. That'd be a dream. I love those movies. I could talk about them forever.
All right. We should do Land Before Time then.
All right, done.
I don't know if I want to do that to myself, though.
The Dancer podcast.
It's too many feelings.
That would be the saddest podcast ever. It would be like doing Sophie's Choice. We'd just be crying. Yeah, exactly. Crying the entire podcast. It'd be brutal. I don't know.
God, it's
so
beautiful.
Well, yeah,
it is.
Dina, thank you very much for coming on. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And you know, when your next project is up and running, you'll definitely have to come back and talk to us about it for sure.
I would love that. Thank you for having me, guys.
Absolutely.